These inscriptions refer to peoples of the sea who attacked Syria, defeated the Hittites and other cultures in Syria. Egypt was able to fend off these sea peoples, but most areas in the Levant, Anatolia, Mesopotamia, and even as far west as Greece suffered some sort of disorder. Archaeological evidence shows a long period of sustained, although not universal, destruction in certain areas. And there's a clear sign that the settlements are smaller in general during this period. So even those cities that aren't destroyed tend to retreat into a much behind city walls that are much more restricted. No area of the Near East looks prosperous during the late second millennium. It is possible that there were economic stresses, perhaps environmental changes that caused economic disruption, as I mentioned in the last lecture on the Amarna letters. It could be anything from a drought to earthquakes. All of these factors could help explain the situation, but so far there is no universal theory to explain to us why there was such widespread destruction. One key factor may have been the interdependence of the regional states of the sort that I described for the Amarna period. This may have meant that the ramifications of these events were much more severe than they could have been otherwise. One area suffers from a drought for a year or two, perhaps an extended period of a decade, and there's a domino effect. They can't supply the other regions. It's a mystery. By the 9th century, written records in Mesopotamia, specifically in Assyria, return. From these sources, we see that new populations from the west and the east had moved into Babylonia at some point during the late second millennium. The Aramaeans, originally from Syria, moved into Babylonia and vied with the Chaldeans, another tribal group, and the Elamites from Iran, together with the Assyrians, for control of Babylonia. The Aramaean language, which used an alphabetic script rather than cuneiform, eventually replaced cuneiform, and this fact will have significant ramifications for our study of the written sources, because Aramaean can be written on papyrus. Remember, the characteristic feature of cuneiform is that it needs to be impressed on a clay tablet with a reed stylus. And so if you shift to an alphabetic script that can be written out as we write today, then you can use papyrus and other perishable materials for your written communication. Another development that had a critical effect on the relationship between the East and West was the domestication of the camel. We start to see evidence for a major increase in trade through the Arabian desert, connecting the eastern routes overland to the Mediterranean. The Arabian tribes that inhabited the desert begin to appear more frequently in the written sources, often as yet another threat to the stability of Mesopotamia. These trade routes that opened across the Arabian desert also permitted armies to travel. And since we're going to see that the region of Syria-Palestine is the focus of many campaigns for the Assyrians and their successors, this really is an important event to keep in mind. We'll come back to Babylonia shortly, but now let's examine Assyria. There were several important Assyrian rulers in the early first millennium, but two 9th century kings, Ashurnasirpal II and Shalmaneser III, exemplify the qualities of Neo-Assyrian rulers. The Neo-Assyrian Empire is what we call this early first millennium empire. When Ashurnasirpal II became king in 883 BC, he would have benefited from two generations of stability on the Assyrian throne and an increasingly experienced Assyrian army, which had campaigned frequently in the previous decades.